step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Today on Rambling About Cars, we're trucking in the USA. You may have heard there's a new Lightning in town. We're not talking about that just yet, though, because you've probably heard and heard and heard and heard about it. So we're going to talk about the cool street trucks that led to the Lightning and coexisted with the Lightning for a while. And yes, the new Lightning is electric. Is it a bad thing? I don't think so. I think there's a lot of potential here. So electrical evangelists, it's podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith. Across the way is Chris Bruce. What's up, Bruce? It's been quite a week, man.
Yeah, it has been quite a week. We got kind of a weird show for you tonight. You'll understand why here in a little bit, but let's start talking about street trucks and performance trucks first. And, you know, doing some research for this episode, the best that I can tell is that the Dodge Little Red Express was the very first kind of street performance truck out there. And, yeah, you know, even in the late 60s, you could get a big block in a Chevy pickup. Like, I'm not saying you couldn't get a speedy pickup before that, but the Little Red Express was the first one that legitimately, it was, the focus was on performance rather than capability.
And you make a good point, Bruce. I really hope we get some emails from people griping about us saying, well, I had a Chevy back in 1969 that had a 454 in it, and it would wipe the street with any muscle car came up against. Yeah, I mean, when you go back to the original muscle car era, I mean, there were so many ways to option out trucks, but none of them were really designed from the get-go to be a street machine.
And right, putting big engine in was supposed to give you more capability, whether it was towing or hauling or pulling or whatever it is you were doing. That was the reason that the bigger engine was there. It was not there for straight line performance. And like I said, can you think of anything earlier than the Little Red Express that kind of did that?
I mean, I was looking as well. Like I said, I think some people might argue that you could get fast trucks with the right engine combination, but no, I mean, when you look at the what was it, 78 and 79, I think the Little Red Express, that was designed from the get-go to be first and foremost a cool-looking, fun street truck. I mean, we're looking at the picture now. You want to catch us on YouTube to get all of these cool pictures because, I mean, this is like a classic 70s shot too. I mean, that's we got the guy there with the curly hair with the girl in the Daisy Dukes. And you've got the Little Red Express with the side pipes and the wood paneling on the sides and the back, little step side. Had the 15-inch wheels with the white letter tires. I mean, just a cool truck. And Bruce, you probably know the loophole that made this one of the fastest, if not the fastest, accelerating U.S. production vehicles in 1978. It wasn't a car. It was this truck.
Right. Because they could classify it as a truck at that point in time, they didn't need to put catalytic converters on it like you would have to your standard muscle car. And they, some clever person at Dodge figured this out. So they put in their 360 V8, but it was essentially the police spec engine that they then upgraded even further with even more stuff. I'm looking at a list here. Superflow heads, the same camshaft as the police version, the double snorkel intake, heavy duty valve springs, cold air induction, dual exhaust that are coming up out of the top. So they did everything they could. Power is still, by modern standards, not that great.
It's weak, but in 1978, it was 225 horsepower, right? And 275 or 280 pound feet of torque, something like that.
I lost my numbers.
Which, I mean, it's a 5.9 liter engine for people that don't speak cubic inch. This is a 5.9 liter engine. So, I mean, it's fairly decent sized displacement wise, but you're talking 1978, the Corvette with its 350, I think was like what? A buck 80, if that.
That was a bad year for the Corvette. Yeah.
I mean, the Trans Am with a 6.6 liter. I think that was right around 200 or maybe 210 horsepower. So, I mean, yeah, it was making good power for the time.
And so to prove that, and to kind of what made this car's legacy is that, so in 1977, Car and Driver tested it, and they took, you can see here, they had a Corvette L82, Monza Spider, a Saab Turbo, a Firebird Trans Am, the Little Red Express, a T-Bird, a Mazda Cosmo. I would love to know how they got a hold of that. A Porsche 924 and a Kelmark GT, which is essentially a VW kit car. And the Little Red Express was the fastest to 100 amongst all of those.
The Little Red Express beat the Corvette. It beat Smokey the Bandit's Trans Am. It beat the Thunderbird at the time. I mean, the Thunderbird.
That's not that impressive of a feat, but
I mean, the Thunderbird at that time
probably had.
I mean, that was, I think, probably the 5 liter in a car weighing 4,000 pounds. So yeah, and that's another thing. The Little Red Express, I want to say that weighed like 3,800 pounds.
No, my research told me that
something like that, which was like, I mean. Man, that's like just a regular Mustang GT today. Never mind something like a Hellcat Charger or a Challenger or the GT500, right?
Right. Right. So, yeah, they're a neat little truck. They only lasted 2 years. It was a 78, 79 thing. So, you know, not around very long, but
very low production, too. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going off the top of my head because I kind of love these trucks. Like something like 2000. For 78, and then like I think
a little 3, bit more, yeah,
a little bit more for the next year, but I think power was down a little bit the next year, and they were the styling was also updated for the next year.
And
for
my mind, the original breakdown is the I'm looking at a price breakdown right now. So first year they were $7,421 out the door. Your options were. You could get air conditioning, heavy duty front springs, and a choice between bench or bucket seats. And those were your options.
Different times, man.
Yeah.
But you know what? I mean, $7,000, it sounds ridiculously cheap now. But $7,078, I mean,
$7,500, but yeah.
I mean, that wasn't just throwaway money by any means. I mean, that was still a pretty decent amount. I can't remember what the what some of the exotics were that time. I mean, I think they were like, I think you paid like 20 or 30 grand or so for some of the Ferraris. So, 7,000 for a little, really a little tiny truck with a tiny bed that just looked good on the street. Yeah, it was an interesting truck for its time.
So
that paved the way for everything that that came afterwards, right?
Yeah. Well, hold on 1 second. So I just pulled it up. I used the Bureau of Labor Statistics inflation calculator. So May of 78, $7,500 at that time is $31,000 today. So,
wow.
Yeah, not too shabby.
So are you saying then that the Ram TRX should be about $30,000? Are you listening, Ram?
Should it be? Yes, but is it? No. It's well, double that and plus
10%. The Hellcat is $30,000. I mean, the engine. No, what's a Hell Crate? That's like 22 or 25 grand, something like that.
I think it's closer to 30, but yeah.
So, oh man, different times.
Anyway,
different times.
Yeah, let's move forward.
Let's move foot forward a little bit. What? So I mean, if we're just going chronologically here, next would be
A weird one. So once again, we're going to be talking a Dodge, but a Carroll Shelby assisted Dodge of
Shelby.
All things. So the Shelby Dakota, I don't know why I said Daytona, Shelby Dakota, this came out in 88. Here, let me double check my numbers here. 89. And yeah, you'll have a picture of it right here
during Shelby's foray with Chrysler.
Yeah. Where you get your Omni GLHSs and
the Omni and the Daytona, as you were about to say, I still lost over those Shelby Daytonas. I don't care that they're front wheel drive. They look amazing with that 2.2 turbo. I would, if I find a nice one, I'm getting it. And I know I say that about some car every week, which is why I'm going to start my GoFundMe to so all of you wonderful listeners can support the Christopher Smith archive.
We should just start a Patreon. Like, people can give us money to buy bad cars.
Buy bad cars, and then you can come over, you can visit, and you can drive them because they're bad cars, yeah. And we don't care.
That's right.
We don't care. This is a great idea. So we're looking at the Shelby Dakota.
So the story with these, they originally came with a 3.9 liter V6 and the regular Dakota. Shelby threw that out. They put in a 5.2 liter V8 with throttle body injection. Again, we're talking late 80s, so power isn't quite the same as it is today. So that 5.2 liter V8 was making 175 horsepower.
But, and that was just the regular output for that engine. I want to stress, I mean, Shelby swapped in that engine, but it was a little disappointing that they didn't do anything else to it. That was just the regular, Dodge 318 V8 at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it was still something. But the point that's worth making, though, is there was no other truck like this on the market that you could just buy. Of course, you could buy a truck and add all sorts of stuff to it. But if you wanted a pre-made truck, it was this or nothing at the time.
And at that time, for the Dakota, that was the only way to get the V8. Dodge offered it later on in the later generations as an option. But if you wanted the V8 in the midsize Dakota in the late 80s, the Shelby was the only way to get it. Now, here's a trivia question that I'll ask you, Bruce.
Okay.
And we'll also put it out to all of the Rambling About Cars listeners out there. How many times does the word Shelby appear in some form on the Shelby Dakota?
Well,
I'll be honest. I don't know that. I don't know the answer.
Seats, because it's nearly infinite. Because it's time after time after time on the seat.
It's like Shelby, 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 Shelby. I mean, it's just, even
if you look at
it's on the door panels. It's on the door panels
as well. Like,
yep, it's on the seats. It's on the
floor mats. Like,
the floor mats.
There's no mistaking this as anything but a Shelby.
It is everywhere. I never sat down to count how many instances of the word Shelby there are, but I think this is probably the record right here, the Shelby Dakota.
Yeah, there is no mistake in this for anything.
And I mean, it was a sign of the times. I mean, the 80s, you're still trying to get performance back in vehicles, and appearance was still the thing. And I mean, Shelby is just revered nowadays. But going here through the 80s, I mean, Shelby didn't have the same kind of following that it has now.
Right.
That really changed when Shelby got reaffiliated with Ford. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at the time, I mean, hey, Shelby was kind of trying to reestablish their name, if you will. So, yeah, all over the Dakota, but still, it's a cool truck. And if you keep an eye out, these pop up from time to time, and they generally don't go for very much money, even in good shape.
They're hard to find in good shape, I got to tell you. So real quick here. So this is we didn't cover this in 2018, but in 2018, apparently Shelby also made a prototype of a Ram Shelby. We'll see it right here. Yeah.
You're surprising me here now. I haven't seen this one.
Yeah, this is a prototype. Never got, made it into series production or anything, but it did exist. It's got a 360 cubic inch V8 with all sorts of work done to it. So it made 300 horse. This is in 1983. That's 300 horse in 1983. That could have been a decent little truck. Like I said, never happened.
That would have been a screamer. But it doesn't really look like a street truck, though. I guess it could be. I mean, it has an aggressive tread on the tire.
I saw it and thought it was interesting. And while I was looking at Shelby stuff, what could have been?
Yeah, you're getting me. That's the first time I've seen that. And you are the boss, because I thought that, okay, I've got a pretty good idea of street trucks. And yeah, you just put me to shame there. Nice find.
Yeah.
What other weird finds are out there? Email us at podcast@motorone.com. I'll throw on that shout out right now. Tell us what we're missing, but let's move on. I think next is going to be the folks from Chevrolet. Am I thinking correct on that?
Yeah, it gets kind of complicated in terms of timing here, but yeah, we can go ahead and do Chevrolet next. And so that's going to be your C Series, a C1500 Silverado as we know it today, the 454 SS,
Yes.
which these things were. I have a vague memory of these. This is just
So
a
do
bit
I,
before my time of kind of cool cars, but I do have vague memories of these being a pretty cool
I mean,
thing.
they were really selling the image, just, I mean, black truck. I mean, this is at a point where you still had a lot of chrome on stuff.
Yeah, and there's
So, I
not a
mean,
bit of chrome on
there's
this thing.
not the only thing chrome on this is the wheels, right? The grill is blacked out. Of course, it had the red trim for the Chevy badge, the 454 SS. I mean, it was a direct callback to the infamous 70 Chevelle SS 454. I know that's a car, but that's considered
But
by
it's the
many
same.
to be like the baddest, the most ultimate muscle car of the original muscle car era. So this was really kind of a callback to that. It had the 454 cubic inch V8.
Only
But
made 230 horsepower, but
but yeah.
385 pound-feet of torque, and you could only get them with an automatic.
Yeah,
So
well,
they
I
were.
mean, with that much torque and just a single cab short bed truck, I mean, I like driving a manual, and I wouldn't want a manual in that. Well, as it was, all of these things did was just atomize rubber. That's all they did. I mean, they were, I think they did 0 to 60 in about like 7.5 seconds if you could get it to hook up, which generally you couldn't. I mean, it's a muscle truck. It's
Right.
a straight up muscle truck. And I mean, this is at the time we're starting to get some power back, but I mean, the image of these trucks just sold, and people kind of glossed over 230 horsepower. Although, again, 1990,
Right.
the Chevrolet Corvette, I think, was 250 horsepower, somewhere around there.
Oh, I see. I thought you were going to talk about the next year from GM, that something that came out. I thought we were
Oh
going to
yeah, well.
transition to that.
Oh, well, we'll transition to that in a moment. I think everybody knows what we're going to transition to there. But I mean, let's take a moment and just appreciate it was a simple truck. I can't recall if there were any substantial suspension modifications.
From what I was seeing, there were different anti-roll bars. So I think they've
So
stiffened that up, but
just beefed up the anti-roll bars. But I mean, otherwise it's just the black truck, the lightest you
big
could get.
engine, you
Two
know.
wheel drive. These weren't four wheel drive. These were two wheel drive, and yeah, you just go out and you roast tires, and I'll drink to that. They love to roast tires.
So I'm looking at it now. So they got a heavy duty radiator. They got separate coolers for the engine and transmission fluid, Bilstein shocks, heavy, sorry,
Okay, they had the
quick
Bilsteins.
ratio steering, and the thicker anti-roll bars.
So
So,
I mean a little bit. I mean a little bit to help it deal with that power. And I mean, yeah, very cool truck, very cool truck. Next year, though,
Yeah, and now this is when things
here
get
comes
really cool.
something from GMC. Now, these didn't smoke the tires because they were driving all four. Well, I guess you could smoke
I've
them
seen people smoke the tires in these.
if you
I've
just
seen
crank the wheel,
videos.
mash the gas, and just sit in one spot doing the ultimate all-wheel drive donut. Of course, we're talking about the GMC Cyclone. Come on. How can we talk about street trucks and not talk about the GMC Cyclone? It came out in 1991 and had the 4.3 liter turbocharged V6, 280 horsepower. And you know, Bruce, it's funny that you referenced the Car and Driver showdown with the Little Red Express back in the 70s, because Car and Driver, if I remember correctly, also had a showdown with the Ferrari 348 and the GMC Cyclone. And it was a rather famous article, I recall, because the Cyclone beat the Ferrari. It's like, here is Chevrolet's, or GMC, if you will. Here is essentially their small, economy-minded kind of base model pickup truck. And it's beating a Ferrari in the quarter mile. It beat it just barely, if I recall. After the quarter mile, the 348 pulled away. But when you have 280 horsepower in a relatively light package, all-wheel drive, it had the four-speed automatic transmission, they were quick. And because of that, they are still legendary to this day.
They're deceptively quick too, is kind of the thing that
Yes.
it doesn't. by modern standards, it doesn't look like a performance vehicle. You know, yeah, at the time with the lack of chrome and whatnot, it looked a little sportier. But by modern standards, it just looks like a small truck. Mm-hmm. And
keep in mind, at the time, there was also the GMC Sonoma, which was an appearance package for the S15. And it was similar looking to the Cyclone. If I remember correctly, it had a very similar front fascia, and it had a lot of monochrome treatments on it. So, I mean, the Cyclone was sort of a riff on that, but obviously all-wheel drive with a turbocharged V6. And the thing about these, I can't remember the torque rating offhand, but the 4.3 liter V6 is already a torquey engine.
350 pound feet.
So that's, I mean, what was the 454 SS? Like 300, like 380?
Yeah, just a little bit more.
From a massive 454 cubic inch V8 to a 4.3 V6. I mean, the torque is really what sold it here. The torque just got these little trucks up and moving. If I remember correctly, I think the drive lines were a little fragile.
I've heard something along those lines.
I mean, it was... I wasn't completely into these cars back in the day, but I do remember hearing some people talking about, they can launch great, but you might only do it two or three times before you run into troubles, which, hey, all-wheel drive at that point, I mean, it was still, I won't say it's in its infancy at this point, but people are still trying to get it figured out. Audi's doing it at this time, obviously.
Audi and Subaru are kind of all-wheel drive are kind of the notables.
Yeah, for on-road performance. I mean, yeah. We're not talking a four-wheel drive system. We're talking a full-time all-wheel drive system, which operates differently. So, I mean, there was a little bit of that involved, but yeah, man. This is another one of those vehicles I'd love to have, but unlike the Shelby Dakota, these aren't cheap.
No.
They're not.
Going up quickly.
They're not like, I don't think they're like six figure territory yet.
No,
but they're going up at a surprising pace.
Yeah.
And I mean, rightfully so. The legend that these things made back in the day,
it's low production, high performance. It's that kind of sweet spot that, you know, that's why people want them. Mm-hmm. There aren't many of them. And the few that are out there, you know that they really are cool performance vehicles. So,
yep. And yeah. Unlike the Dakotas, you actually see some of these in nice condition running around because people have found them. I mean, I'm not saying that they didn't get beat on back in the day because they did, but people are finding them. They're restoring them. They're putting them back in shape. And of course we can't talk about the Cyclone without talking about its little baby SUV twin. I mean, technically, I mean, it's not a truck, it's an SUV, but come on, we can't do this without mentioning the Typhoon. Same thing. It's basically
the same vehicle.
It's the same vehicle. It's the 4.3 V6 from 92 to 93. It was done on the Jimmy platform, so it had an enclosed back instead of the open pickup bed. I think the performance was about the same.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
Despite the differences, but Cyclone, Typhoon, man, those twins. Twins are something of legend.
So is the plan we're purposely going to skip the Lightning just because we kind of did Lightning talk?
We've done a lot of Lightning talk. I mean, obviously I'm a big Lightning fan. I'll put a shout out. I've got my 125th scale first generation Lightning that I still need to build. That was a response, honestly, to the SS454.
Yeah.
And you know, Ford did a good job on it. But yeah, we've talked Lightning, Blue. If you want to go back a couple Rambling About Cars episodes, you can hear me
two or three. Yeah.
Go just on and on about it. Let's stick with Chevrolet.
So this is one I got to be honest with you. I totally forgot about. I completely forgot about this, but there was a Silverado SS that launched in early 2003. And we're looking at it now. It had the 6-liter Vortec V8 making 345 horsepower, yep. 380 pound feet. This is honestly, until you mentioned it, this is one that
Really?
Kind of out of my purview. I missed this one.
You know, it's kind of ironic because the SS-454 from 1990 kind of spurred the first generation Lightning. And then the second generation Lightning kind of spurred the Silverado SS. You know, it's give a little, take a little. The Silverado SS, it wasn't as beefy as that second gen Lightning was. Obviously, as you've seen here from the picture, you could get it in the extended cab. But I mean, it was still a decent performing truck. They didn't, once again, though, they kind of focused more on, well, let's keep it a truck, but just, you know, let's make it monochrome. Let's get rid of the chrome. You know, let's give it some neat body work. Let's give it some wheels, a badge, and a muscular engine. It's not quite the corner carver that the second gen Lightning was. And I say corner carver kind of loosely because, I mean, we're still talking about a truck, but Ford and Ford SVT did a lot of homework on the second gen Lightning to not just make it fast, but to also actually make it handle pretty decently. And their formula was always, well, we'll take the smallest configuration F-150 that you can get, the single cab flare side, and we'll make that happen. Chevrolet with the Silverado, they obviously offered it in the single cab as well as the extended cab, which, I mean, you know, I remember back in the day seeing a lot of those extended cab Silverado SSs running around. And of course,
it must have just been where I live. I don't ever remember seeing this vehicle. I don't know, I mean,
they weren't everywhere.
I saw
and that's a good number
of second gen Lightnings.
Well, I mean, that's why
I remember seeing one of these.
That's why these didn't last too long, I guess. But I mean, I hate to dish out hate because these were cool trucks, and they were. I mean, they were pretty quick. I can't remember offhand what their 0 to 60 times were. I can look that up really quick because I'm kind of curious about it as well. Silverado SS 0 to 60. I want to say they were like low sevens. Okay. Yeah. I'm hitting it right on the head there. Like high sixes, low 7 seconds.
Okay.
Well, Car and Driver got it up to 6.3. I don't know if that's using the rollout or not, but I mean, yeah. Mid 6 second in the early 2000s. I mean, that's stout for a pickup truck. That's stout for just about anything, never mind a pickup truck. So, I mean, yeah, it had the straight line performance. Chevrolet was, I mean, with the extended cab, they were exploring kind of new territory there because up to this point, when you look at the Little Red Express, when you look at the Shelby Dakota, when you look at the SS-454 and the Lightning, those were all just single cab, small, you know, pickups. So they were trying to explore the waters a little bit. Okay, can we offer something performance oriented that's going to appeal to somebody that wants a little more space? And I think the answer was no. If I remember correctly, they just didn't sell that well. But
that's probably why I've never seen it. I don't ever remember seeing one.
I can't believe you've never seen. Well, hey, you showed me the full size Ram Shelby concept. I introduced you to the Silverado SS. We're on the same page here now.
So people watching on YouTube just got a teaser of what we're going to be talking about next. And this is one I am very familiar with. Yep. And that's the Ram SRT10. That debuted. So it went on sale for 2004. And so I had an uncle who worked at the Twinsburg stamping plant in Ohio. And he wanted one of these trucks so bad. Like he just desperately wanted, he had, you know, a V8 Ram, but you know, not the SRT10, but he desperately wanted one of these trucks. So I definitely have a memory of one of these. And these things were wild. Basically, for anyone not familiar with them, they took the V10 out of the Viper and they shoved it into a pickup truck.
And I mean, and that's really, I mean, they did work on the suspension.
Yeah, I'm being a bit reductive, but that's the selling point.
Yeah, I mean, you have to make some changes when you drop a big V10 with that much power in there. Oh God, and it's with the manual too. I remember Dodge making a big deal because you can never get the Lightning with a manual; it was only automatic, and Dodge was making a big deal. You could get theirs with a manual transmission.
I think you could only get it with a manual, unless I'm maybe mistaken.
There is
an automatic. Yeah,
there were automatics offered, and I believe it started out just as the small formula, the single cab, the short bed, but they followed Chevrolet's lead, if you will, And they eventually offered the Ram SRT 10 in just a huge quad cab format. And even with that V10, I mean, it was still quick, but it wasn't, if I remember correctly, it wasn't lightning quick. The second gen Lightnings, I think, were getting stocked to 60 miles an hour in about 5 seconds. And I think the Ram SRT struggled to get there despite having considerably more power. But they did hold the speed record for pickup trucks at one point, 150 some miles an hour. I don't know, Bruce, do you want to go 150 in an older Dodge Ram?
No,
no,
I barely want to go 80 in an older Dodge Ram. Oh yeah, here's the quad cab you're talking about. Like,
yep,
there's something undeniably like kind of, you know, there's something like childishly cool about that. Like, I don't want to own one, but the just like a stupid big engine and a big dumb truck. Like, it's there's something to be said for that.
I mean, there is. There is. And I mean, I even hesitate to call it. Well, okay. Maybe it is kind of big, dumb truck territory.
An 8.3 liter V10 in a giant truck, like,
and not designed for like pulling your horse trailers or anything.
Just
designed to roast the back tires into oblivion.
Right. No,
there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that, but a little bit something wrong with
that. Well, I haven't looked at prices on those lately, but for a while you could get those like cheap, like 15 or 20 grand for a 500 horsepower V10 muscle truck. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's because that's a Viper engine. Anything that goes wrong, you have to pay 10 grand to fix.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, that was probably, I would say that's the pinnacle of the street truck era, if you will, because Ford, obviously at this point, they dropped the Lightning after 2004. There were plans for a Lightning in 2005 with a new body style. And I actually saw some of the mock-ups for that.
Oh, really?
SVT at that time, they were running into some of the issues that Dodge eventually ran into with their SRT10. Okay, the trucks keep getting bigger. We need progressively more power to maintain that kind of performance. At what point does this become ridiculous and just cost prohibitive?
Right.
And then also Ford then mainstreamed SVT from its kind of separate group that it was into Ford proper. And that put the axe on all kinds of SVT plans. So that's where that ended there.
And also, we entered the realm of the off-road performance truck.
TRX,
like, you know, we've kind of been seeing that. That's kind of the new way that companies do that. That kind of the street performance truck, it's pretty much dead. There isn't really one anymore.
Not really. Well, it's probably worth mentioning the Harley-Davidson F-150s. Because sort of took the place of the SVT Lightning
for a little while. They did
through the 2000s. I mean, you could even get them supercharged there for a little while, and they were pretty gutsy. And of course, we've seen some companies trying to revive just on their own, like a Harley Davidson branded pickup truck.
Yep.
I think the last one we saw was a couple years ago, but wasn't it almost like a six-figure truck or something? It was. I mean, it's just getting kind of ridiculous, you know.
Yeah. So do we want to go ahead and transition into what's going to make this show a little bit different?
Well, before we do that, I need to mention one more street truck that existed after the Ram. And a lot of people overlook it.
It's the one I'm thinking of. It's overlooked for good reason in my mind.
I don't know if it's a good reason. So here's the thing. Okay. This truck isn't known for its power because it's got just a V6. Oh gosh, where is my image of this? Okay, let me just tell you, it's the Toyota Tacoma X-Runner that came out in the mid 2000s. Here, I've got it right here.
If you don't, I've got it.
Look at that! But look at that truck. I mean, okay, so it's the Tacoma. It's lowered. It's got Bilstein shocks. It's got a 6-speed manual. I mean, it's a straight up street truck designed to go out rogue gears, toss it through some corners. It's not gargantuan in size. It doesn't have a lot of power. What I had some notes written down here. What was it? I think 236 horsepower, six more horsepower than the SS454. Come on, guys. Six-speed manual.
Over a decade later.
Six-speed, but here, I mean, come on. Six-speed manual, and it wasn't, you know, like a two-foot stick like you had in the SRT10.
Sure.
If you wanted a street truck not to just go out and roast the tires, but actually have a little bit of fun with, like, on some back roads, man, the X-Runner is overlooked. And I love this truck ever since it came out. This will be another one that I'll put into my garage one of these days. So when I get that GoFundMe started, know that your funds are going to go towards Shelby Dakotas, a Dodge Daytona. Well, I'll toss the car in there. This Toyota Tacoma X-Runner, possibly a few other, you know, minor things like Ferraris and stuff. We don't need to talk about that.
You don't need to own a Ferrari.
Yeah, I know, but I kind of do. But we're not talking about Ferraris. We're talking about the Toyota Tacoma X-Runner.
I don't. These just never did anything for me. Like, I mean, it's just, I mean, not.
They went and maybe that's why they didn't last too long. I think they wrapped up like 2011 or 2012. Yeah, somewhere around there. So, I mean, they didn't exist for a long time. But I thought it was a cool effort. I thought it was a very cool effort on Toyota. Nobody else was really doing that at the time. It was an interesting response to the big dumb SRT10. And could we see something like that again with trucks like the Santa Cruz and the Maverick that are coming out, you think?
Yeah, I do. I mean, we kind of already know that there's going to be a Tremor or some version of the Maverick. You know,
what are we looking at here, Bruce? You're still sharing your screen. We're looking at some weird. Concept. What is that? Mercury 528 Belgium.
Apparently a 55 Mercury concept, but I apologize here.
Don't apologize. We need to talk about that car in a future episode. I've never seen that before.
I'm fine with that.
Okay, so let's talk about what makes this episode a little different here.
Okay. So the F-150 Lightning has debuted by the time you've heard this. It's debuting. Mr. Smith is going to be on the live stream that Motor One is doing, where they are going to be breaking apart everything about the Lightning. We are going to have a pre-show. We are going to be talking over the debut, and we are going to have a post-show once we have all of the debut info. Unfortunately, I will not be on that show for reasons. But Smith will be.
I will be. And we do have a pretty interesting group, and there's going to be some very interesting discussion. We have the pre-show, and then we're going to be there live with the Lightning debut. It's already debuted as you're listening to this. So let me just run over some quick stats here before we jump to the next part. It's going to be, and this is what kind of gets me more than anything. They're going to offer it starting under $40,000, $39 and change. And for that price, it's going to be standard all-wheel drive. They're calling it 4x4, but really it's dual motors, front and rear. It's got the independent rear suspension at the back. Ford is estimating 563 horsepower, 775 pound-feet of torque. It's easily the most powerful F-150 ever. They're targeting a 0-60 time of the mid 4 second range. That should make it among the fastest. I don't know what the Raptor R is going to do when it comes out. But this truck is going to be extremely fast. It's got an estimated EPA estimated range of 230 miles in its standard mode. Long range mode is going to have a 300 mile range. It's going to have a charge time. Charge 54 miles of range in 10 minutes. That's on 150 kilowatt charger. So, you know, reasonably fast charger. You can go from 15 to 80% of your range in 41 minutes on that charger. So, I mean, it's not the fastest, but I think it'll be a competitive vehicle. And of course, we're talking about all kinds of things with our group, with the debut of the Lightning and then our post show. And what we're going to do, instead of Bruce and I talking about it and just kind of repeating everything here, we're actually going to drop in the post show, and we're going to do that right now. And then Bruce and I are going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about what we think here.
Yeah. And just real quick, I just want to clarify, this is an experiment. We honestly don't know how this is going to work, but we're trying it because we think it could be cool. So honestly, we want your feedback about this. If you think it's cool to kind of get to kind of have this different content, you're going to be hearing from Clint Simone, who's been on the podcast before, Tom Balogny, who's been on the podcast before, Kristen Shaw, who is a kind of a regular person on the Inside EVs podcast. Mm-hmm. So these are really cool people. But we haven't really tried this kind of live stream / podcast idea before. And we kind of want your opinion because we would like to do that in the future. We've kind of toyed with it, but we're not sure what you guys think. So podcast at motorone.com, you know the address. You also know how to get in touch with Smith and I, whether it's through the post, whether it's through Twitter, whatever. Let us know, because if you see this and you hate it, we won't do it again. If you see it and you love it, we have some ideas on how to approach things in the future.
Yep. And one thing worth mentioning too, I mean, when we're talking about experiments, we really like the idea of doing a live version of Rambling About Cards where listeners are right here with us in comments, where you can say, Smith, what the hell is that on the shelf behind you? And you can congratulate Bruce on his absolutely superior vehicle knowledge. I'm still in awe on that Dodge Ram. I'm not going to ever forget that. So that's why we want to hear from you. Podcast at motorone.com. You can get me on Twitter at CH Writing. Bruce, what's your Twitter?
Chris Bruce 1985. But we're not done. We're throwing to you guys.
We're not done. We're going to go to the live stream post show. And here we go.
Some of the big ticket items, just to paraphrase from that presentation, two battery options. We have a 2 different ranges on this truck. It'll come standard with 230 miles of range, up to 300 miles of range, 426 horsepower base. We have up to 563 horsepower on the bigger battery pack. And then the other big headline, $39,000-ish to start. And the top of the line, fully loaded model, up to $90,000. There's a lot to go over here. Tom, hit me with your biggest thing that you got out of that presentation. What are you thinking?
So, you know, the charging is important to me, being so, you know, electric vehicle focused. And I think they're doing well with that. You know, we got some more stats, 15 to 80% in 44 minutes. The extended range battery pack is going to have a 19 kilowatt onboard charger. The thing will recharge quickly. And as I was trying to say at the end, when Ford so rudely interrupted me and started the presentation, I'll have to talk to Bill about that. The vehicle to load. This vehicle is going to have the ability to deliver 9.6 kilowatts. That's like having a 10 kilowatt genset. I mean, that can power your whole house, even a small air conditioner in the house. So, as far as not just the house, work, job sites, that can power all the power tools that you could possibly, you could have your entire crew, working off the vehicle. So that was really one of the things I was looking for. I said earlier, some of the things it's not going to stack up to a diesel F-150 or a gas F-150 range and things like that. That it's not going to be able to compete with that. So for some people, it's not going to work. But it's Ford did what they needed to do and made the charging, both charging the vehicle and then vehicle to grid, very functional.
Yeah, I'm in Texas, and that really caught my attention when he was talking about powering your house for 3 days, because I have friends who lost power for at least 3 days, and that would have helped them out a ton.
Yeah,
it distracted me from the range numbers, which I thought were a little bit disappointing. I would have liked to have seen them start at 300 and go up, but I guess you have to start somewhere.
Yeah, I agree. I almost feel like they're setting us up for like a longer range version that's going to come further down the road. When you're talking about, 300 seems like that should be where they're starting with a vehicle this size, and then go up with 400. I think, Tom, you probably know better right offhand. Tesla's quoting, 500 in Cybertruck. So I feel like Ford needed to do a little bit better here on the range.
Well, what Tesla quotes and what they deliver sometimes are two different things.
Right.
And I'm a Tesla owner. I drive a Tesla and I have a Cybertruck reservation. So, I beat them up a lot, but they also do some things well. I'm not surprised by the range personally. I didn't think, and I was kind of setting that up in the beginning, I didn't think that this was going to be the truck for everybody. And it's not going to be. But you have to remember, and for those that don't live with electric vehicles, that don't work with them every day like I do, there's a different paradigm with the range, where every day that work truck or that truck you're driving leaves your yard or your, you know, your business or your home fully charged. So you've got this 300 mile range every day. And, you know, for people that are wondering, will this work for my business? You know, can this work? You know what? Get a little pad, paper, and every day that work truck goes out in the morning, reset your trip. And then at the end of the day, record how many miles it drove. Do that for a couple of months and see how often do you need more than 250 miles of range. Now, there's a lot of people, especially middle America, that's going to need more than that. And it won't work for everybody. But like I said, 15% of their sales, 150,000 of these sold a year. I think Ford would sign on for that in a heartbeat.
Let's do a quick recap of some of the performance stats here. 426 horsepower, 563 horsepower in the extended range, and up to 775 pound-feet of torque. Jim Farley said it. This thing should absolutely haul ass, especially for something that's this size, right? We found out today that, or yesterday, I guess, that the Hummer EV is going to weigh over 9,000 pounds. They were coy on the weight. They didn't tell us how much this is going to weigh with payload or without payload, but it's got to be what, 6,000 pounds plus, or is that overdoing it?
No, I mean, didn't we hear somewhere that the batteries alone are like the weight of a small car?
Yeah.
I want to say that cropped up somewhere. So, I mean, I think it'll be over 6,000. I think it'll be closer to 7. I don't think it's going to be Hummer EV territory. But I mean, it's an electric vehicle. We know the batteries weigh something. I don't think in this instance that people are as interested in the vehicle weight, as long as it has the cargo capacity, as long as it has the towing capacity. And on this truck, I mean, like Tom has been saying, this isn't a solution for everybody. This is the first step into this world, and the performance that Ford is advertising. I mean, when they started talking about low center of gravity, perfect weight balance, best handling, fastest F-150. I mean, that was appealing to all the first and second gen Lightning lovers out there. I mean, that was a straight up homage to them. Hey, this is a truck that seats five people. Yes, you can take it off road if you want, but we still know there's a Lightning badge on there. It still has to mean something.
And he did say it's faster. He said it's faster. Oh, yeah. It's quicker than the Raptor and the original Lightning. And that's going to attract some buyers.
Yeah, well, mid-4-second range, the first-gen Lightning, I mean, that was 240 horse. That was 0 to 60 in about, on a good day, maybe 7.5 seconds. The second-gen, when they upped the power to 380, those were low to mid-5-second, 0 to 60, provided you could get them to hook up, and a lot of people couldn't get them to hook up. Sorry, all you OG Lightning lovers, the new electric Lightning is going to smoke them all.
It's going to smoke them all in sales, too. I bet you
I think the first full
year of production, it's going to outsell the entire 9-year run of the Lightning pickup trucks of past.
Well, and in defense, too, to SVT, I mean, they were always on the mindset of, okay, this is a niche vehicle. We're purposefully not going to sell a lot of them because we wanted to be kind of unique. But I also, to that effect, a lot of people just weren't interested in a street truck. They still wanted their truck to do things, which is why when Ford came out with the Raptor, okay, here's a high performance truck that can go off road and on. That thing sold like gangbusters. So I think Ford is actually taking a really smart approach here. You can make this a street truck if you want. I bet there are already aftermarket companies just rubbing their hands together with lowering kits and things to drop it down a little bit, especially with that kind of electric power on hand. But it also has the ground clearance. And if you want to take it off road, I mean, I don't think you're going to take it to Rubicon, right? But if you want to go off road, I mean, you can a little bit. It has that capability. I think Ford's playing it down the middle. And I think they're onto something here.
If you have a question for us, go ahead and drop it in the comments section. We'd love to take some questions from anybody who's watching right now. And otherwise, head over to Motor1.com or InsideEVs.com. At the very top of the website, we'll have all the coverage on this truck that you need to know, including an exclusive first look video where we get in person with the truck and get to play around with it a little bit. Yeah, there were so many things that jumped out at me as small features, and we should jump and kind of talk about the tech in this truck too, not just the truck things, but the interior and then some of the specifics of it being an EV. What comes to mind with each of you is the coolest sort of tech feature, not necessarily a truck feature? Kristen, I'll start with you.
Well, the screen, I mean, you can't miss it, right?
Right. <giant. laughs> Let me find a picture of that, and I'll get it up on the screen in just a second here.
Yeah, it's got that high-tech feel. I mean, plus it just has lots of power options. I think they said 11. Did they say something about 11 power outlets? I mean, plus it being able to charge your house up. It's got the electronic key, the smart key, smart towing.
Right.
So they're thinking of everything they've got and throwing it into this truck. Like, let's do it all.
You're on screen right now with the 15 and a half inch display. It's right out of the Mach-E. I got to say, the user interface looks a little different. We've been lucky enough to play around with the Mach-E a couple of times, and this looks like a different software that's in it. And we also have a digital instrument cluster that I believe they said is standard across all of the trim levels. We have a question on screen right now talking about the max towing. I believe it's up to 10,000 pounds on the extended range battery. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah. 10,000, which, I mean, hey, that's a healthy number.
That's a big camper. You could tow. I mean, it looks like a great vacation vehicle, right? You can have a giant frunk and you can tow.
I mean, the question that I know people are asking, okay, it can tow 10,000 pounds, but how far can it tow the 10,000 pounds? How big of an effect is that going to have on the range? I mean, that's something that we don't know yet. I mean, Ford hasn't said anything about it. And as Tom has been saying, I mean, maybe, yes, it can tow 10,000 pounds, but I really don't see this as being a vehicle that people are going to want to take on long vacations, at least right now, to tow their RV or their boat, because, I mean, let's be honest, that range will be affected. Mm-hmm.
But did you notice one of the things that they brought up, which caught my ear, I was really interested in, I'd love to play with this, is they're going to have a smart range estimator, and it's going to be able to calculate your range while towing. I don't know how they're going to do that, because unless you're going to, you know, weigh them or tell them exactly how much you're pulling, maybe after driving 30 or 40 miles, it'll calculate the consumption rating that it's having and then give you an updated range estimator. But I mean, that's something that I'd geek out over. If Ford's listening, let me get a hold of one of these and I'll do a whole video and article on it, because I'm really interested in seeing how that works. We do a lot of articles on Inside EVs, just on electric vehicles, towing trailers and whatever. People are fascinated with it because it does really affect the range. So, you know, I really want to get someone's ear at Ford and figure out, okay, what are you doing with this and how does it work?
There's a lot of good questions coming through as well. Let's hit that question in a second, but I also wanted to make the point. It has scales in the bed of the truck to account for the payload to make the range accurate. I think that's really interesting and a good piece of technology, so that when you load up the truck, like most people will, it doesn't completely deplete the range out of nowhere and you end up saying, what the hell? How come I'm 60 miles short of where I need to be?
Right. And does the range estimator can also take into consideration topography? Like, you see that it's pulling that Airstream up a mountain. Pulling that Airstream up a, you know, 10% grade or 5% grade is a lot different than pulling it on flat ground. So, you know, it's going to have to take into consideration topography too, in addition to the weight.
Let's get that comment on the screen right now. The one that's unfortunately blocking Kristen's face.
That's not intentional.
That's terrible. Gerald, you should be ashamed.
No problem.
We'll get that comment pulled down. But the $39,000 truck, there's not going to be a commercial grade one that's cheaper. Is that right? That is the lowest cost of entry. And I can head over to the Ford website too. The pre-orders just went live right now. I think they're going to make you order the expensive trims before they'll offer the true base price truck.
Yeah, at the end of that presentation, I mean that's why I was a little confused there too, because Farley was talking about, if you are a commercial customer, we're going to have a special version just for you. I wasn't clear if that was the 39,000 dollar price at Equator, or if there's going to be one underneath that yet. So, I mean, yeah, that's something that we're going to look into.
Well, let's do this together. Let's order a truck together right now through Ford and see what we're dealing with.
I want the high power.
What do we want to do? So they have lightning at the top. We can click on that. While we're just going through that, are there any other, you know, they made a big deal of this and kind of rightfully so. We knew long before today that this truck was going to be a game changer. And to me, at least, it really felt like they made it feel that way. Going forward with the timeline, how important is it that this truck gets to market quickly? I believe we're still about a year out from it hitting production. I don't want to be mistaken on that.
I think it's coming out. It's supposed to come out the first versions next spring. So yeah, I mean, yeah, we're still about a year out. I mean, we were supposed to see a production version of Cybertruck by now, and we still haven't seen that. I think if Ford can end up beating Tesla to market, I think that would be a big win for them. I mean, they're not going to catch Rivian, I don't think, right, Tom?
No, Rivian's a friend of mine's got his delivery notice, and next month he's supposed to get it. So they're not beating Rivian.
No, I think that's true as well. We did have a comment that I want to address right now. It's asking us to compare this truck to the Cybertruck. And what do we think? Because we know that Tesla people are Tesla people, and rightfully so. If the company can deliver on any of the specs they promise, that's going to be one hell of a truck, like it or not. What do we think about this as a direct comparison point?
Well, is this really a launch if they didn't try to break the windows?
Try? Well,
that's a fail on Ford's part. They should have tried that.
I mean, that would have been funny if they played around with that, if they did something. But,
that could have been an easy win, too.
That would have been really funny.
Just like throw a beanbag ball at the window,
something like that.
Yeah, but Ford's more conservative than that, right? Yeah. They wouldn't be likely to play with that. But I really think that this is a much more attractive truck than the Cybertruck, and I know I'm not alone thinking that.
Let's go through just a couple more comments before we start taking down the rest of this post. I'm excited about this. I think that this truck, we've been thinking about it for so long now, and they've been doing all these like little marketing stunts along the way, but it feels like a big deal. Any other final thoughts from each of you before I start plugging how we're going to talk about this truck the rest of the week, including some more in-depth coverage on the podcast, which is coming up later in the week. Final thoughts, yes, Everybody?
So I have a final question. I want to know how many they can make each year, because they're going to be constrained by batteries. Everybody is. They couldn't, if everyone decided to buy this instead of the gasoline version, we know they couldn't make a million of them. So I wonder what their capacity is to put these out, and will they be, supply constrained, for the first year or so? Will more people order them than they can deliver? That's what I'd like to know.
I think if I had to choose between the all-electric and the Power Boost hybrid, I would pick the hybrid because the range is spectacular. Mm. And I'm really impressed by that. But this is quicker than the Raptor. Like, I can't wait to try it.
That's true.
Kind of what I said already, I think Ford is really smart playing this the way they're playing it. They're pulling on lightning heartstrings by saying, hey, this is a fast truck. This is also a good handling truck. That's something that was also always part of Lightning's history. It wasn't just power. They also tried to make them handle a little bit better. But they're still also trying to make this truck appeal to a broader, more mainstream audience. And I think they're going to pick some of that audience. And I also think, because my marketing brain picked this up after like the first 15 minutes of being fed, and rightfully so. The pride of this truck being built at Rouge, at the Rouge plant.
That's true.
The shout out to all the UAW, all the people in the UAW, the unions, the manufacturing, the immense pride that's going into this. That was not just simple lip service. That was Ford reminding everybody, this is the F-150. This is our all-American truck. It's electric, but it's still all-American. And also a quick shout out. We're going to talk more about this on Rambling About Cars that drops Friday morning, our podcast at MotorOne.com. We're actually going to have our post show plugged in there, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the Lightning and all the trucks that led up to Lightning.
And we're back.
And
I
we're
hope you
back.
Enjoyed it.
We're back. That was a very interesting show. I gotta say, I didn't really know what to expect going in.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of talk with them, Bruce. I want to talk a little bit about Electric Lightning with you. We've talked a lot of Fords over the last month, yeah, and I promise, going forward, we are doing
a no Ford month. Starting, it is what
no Ford
goes up. It's what going to be the 22nd, 23rd. I am not talking about Fords again for a month because we have done too much Ford content on this show.
We need to talk S2000s. We need to talk 400Zs. We need to talk press photos from the 1960s because
that's what the hell should be. Yeah.
But let's you and I go over Lightning a little bit because I mean, you know, a little bit about Lightning here now. Sure. It's not a street truck. But
it's not an off-road truck.
It's not an off-road. See, this is why I think it's actually a really smart move by Ford. It's not a street truck, and I know purists are going to be like they're going to be upset. It should be lower. They should be doing more with the suspension. This isn't a Lightning. Well, it's more of a Lightning than the Mach-E is a Mustang. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah,
this truck is fast, like the Lightning was. It's, for one thing, a pickup truck like the Lightning was.
It's got a real bed. It's like 5.5 feet, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's got a real bed. There's no other way to say it. It's seriously quick for what it is. It's seriously quick for a truck.
Yeah.
But Ford also has to recognize they need to kind of sell. I think they understand they need to sell a fair amount of people on the idea of an electric F-150. And if you package that in just a street truck, there are a lot of F-150 drivers that aren't interested really in a street truck. So this is ready to venture off the beaten path a little bit.
People aren't taking their F-150s off-road that often. I think that's fine. My issue is the range. The 230 miles for the standard version, you know, estimated, we don't know exactly yet, but it feels low-ish, especially when you consider if someone's towing or something like that, that number's going to drop quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I wish, because, you know, as we had been reporting on this, the rumor was 300 would be the start, and then the expanded battery might get you closer to 400. I feel like 300 should just be the starting point. That's the kind of what sticks in my craw.
I do think the range could be a little bit better, and I suspect going forward it will be better.
Oh yeah.
I think I won't say that Ford's kind of dipping their toe into the water because it's out there. This truck is here. It's electric. Mm-hmm. It's an F-150. It's full size. They're saying it'll do everything that your regular F-150 would do. I guess I'm not thinking in terms of towing and that application, because I know a lot of people will tow with their trucks, but that's a rare occasion. I'm thinking of the people that use a truck for work or business, where you might not be going but 50 or 100 miles a day, where you're not even going to be remotely worried about that range. I mean, think about contractors that are using this in a professional setting. You're not going to be paying for fuel anymore. You're not going to be paying for oil changes. You're not going to be going in for lube service. You're not going to go in for coolant flushes. The cost of ownership over time is just going to come back in such a major way. And if they're offering a decent truck for under 40 grand, people are going out right now and spending 50 grand on an F-150 and not thinking twice about it.
Sure. Yeah.
So if you could come back at 40 grand and wipe out all of that other cost of ownership stuff over the course of a couple of years, I mean, especially for fleets, I see this being just a huge step for fleet vehicles that aren't running more than maybe 100 miles a day, where every day they come back, they plug in, even if it's just a regular old plug where they charge overnight. The next morning you get up, your truck is essentially filled up with gas. So, hey, I think it's a smart move. I think Ford is doing a really good job of balancing the old Lightning name and what it meant and saying, hey, you still have that performance that Lightning had, but now you have a little bit more truck use. So we'll see what happens from here. Right.
Yeah. I guess I'm a touch more pessimistic than you. Not pessimistic. I think it's a good vehicle. I think people are going to accept it. I guess I wish it was just a little bit more, but I think going through my head about it, I don't think the vehicle that we're seeing arrive now is going to be the same vehicle that's going to be on sale 5 or 10 years from now. Okay. I can see, you know, they're going to introduce it in this spec, and within 5 or 10 years, it is going to be a far better vehicle than it is today just because of technology. And they're going to figure out, you know, economies of scale. They're going to figure out how to produce it better. I'm not necessarily in love with it right this moment, but I think going down the line, the fact that Ford is doing this now is super smart, because we know there's a Silverado EV coming, but it's going to be on the market after the Ford. So Ford gets first movement advantage there. Mm-hmm. And we haven't really heard anything. Have we heard anything about a Stellantis full EV pickup? Am I crazy? I haven't.
Nope. So, there's nothing happening there. I mean, we've got Rivian that should be coming out.
Right.
Supposedly next month.
I'm just thinking about Rivian's the classic big three.
And here's another thing. Tesla kind of put everybody on notice with a Cybertruck. We still haven't seen the production version of Cybertruck.
No.
Tesla is still kicking that down the road. So, yeah, I think Ford making this move right now.
Yeah.
It's a good move.
I am cautiously optimistic is the best way to put it. I don't necessarily love it right now today, but I think if you ask me in 5 years, I could be on board.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm all for – I love my V8s. I love my sound. But I'm all for an electric future. So yeah. I think we're stepping in the right direction. What do you think, folks? Podcast at MotorOne.com. The new Lightning is out.
Thank you for joining us. Yeah.
Or should we just throw it all away and just embrace our street trucks of yore?
And honestly, seriously, if you listen to this much of the podcast, tell us what you thought of kind of putting the live stream in.
Yeah.
Because we aren't sure whether this is truly an experiment, and we want to know what you think. So please give us feedback.
Let us know. And you know what, Bruce, I think it's time for you to take us out of here.
Yeah. So as always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Whenever you happen to listen to us, we appreciate it. We always appreciate every single person that listens to us, that leaves any sort of review, that gives us any sort of feedback. It's all appreciated. So yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.